Thanks, Dave, for Dave and Bobby for letting me speak on this open slot. So the first thing I have to point out is that the date is wrong here, because I gave this talk 1 week ago. So this was my PhD defense talk. It was mostly aimed at an audience of algebraic geometers. So please, if something is not clear what it means, just stop me, let me know. I want to talk about these three things, two of which I would say are mathematically well-defined, right? So deformations of G2 structures and the flat Higgs bundles. And the point of this talk is to say how we can make mathematical sense of certain string dualities that connect these two notions. It's very related to Sakura's talk, but the G2 manifolds that I'm going to talk about are different from hers, but it's the same kind of idea. So string dualities is because I'll speak about two of them. The main one will be M-theory type 2A duality, and that's exactly what's going to relate these two notions. And later on in the talk, I'm going to talk a little about the SYZ mirror of the type 2A dual that I get in this configuration. So the G2 manifolds that I'm going to talk about, they're going to be vibrations of AGE singularities or ALE spaces over flat remaining three manifolds. The reason for that will be soon clear. So I need to talk a little bit about flat remaining manifolds. So if you fix a discrete subgroup of the isometries of Rn, that pi over there, we call it Bieber-Bach if it acts properly discontinuously on Rn and freely, and such that the quotient is compact. In that case, this quotient that I'm calling Q is a compact flat. It just inherits the flat structure from Rn and has the fundamental group exactly that pi that you started with. So these pi's, they are classified. Basically, they fit into this exact sequence where this... The fundamental theorem in this area is Bieber-Bach's theorem, which I stated here in the first statement. Bieber-Bach's theorem is that H is a finite group and lambda is a lattice. So you can think of lambda Zn here. In all the Bieber-Bach's theorems, I stated first the algebraic version of the result, and just on its side, it's like a geometric formulation of the same thing. So the equivalent geometric formulation of the first part of the theorem is that there's a finite normal covering from the n torus to Q, which is a local isometry. So the n torus is a trivial kind of Bieber-Bach space where H is zero. This H is called in the literature on flat remaining geometry, it's called the holonomy of pi. I might call it the monodromy of pi because I'm more used to using that term. But in this context, these terms are indistinguishable because the monodromy is the group of connected components of the holonomy, but here the holonomy is like basically a bunch of points, so it's the same thing. So if I say monodromy, I mean this H. So the second part of Bieber-Bach's theorem says that if you have two Bieber-Bach subgroups of the isometries of Rn, then if they are isomorphic, the isomorphism is given by a conjugation of the affine transformations of Rn. So geometrically, this means that two Bieber-Bach manifolds of the same dimension and the same fundamental groups are affinely isomorphic. And the third one says that, which is the strongest one, says that there are only finite, at every dimension, there are only finitely many isomorphism classes, affine isomorphism classes of Bieber-Bach manifolds of dimension n. So I'm going to be interested in dimension 3. And these are classified. They have this fancy name, platycosms, that was given by John Conway and Juan Rossetti. So this manifold is called the torocosm, just a flat torus, right? So they call it, they give this nomenclature for these spaces. Platycosm literally means like flat universe in Greek. And the reason they gave this name is because supposedly these are good models for the spatial universe. Like if the universe is flat in high scales and finite, then it has to have one of these topologies. And actually, there's there are some papers in cosmology that like try to probe, like using the cosmic background radiation, like to probe this kind of topology. So it's kind of a cool thing. Yeah. Yeah, so I saw a paper from 2014 that says like you would think it's a torus, it's a tree torus, but they are actually able to rule out 2, 3, 4, and 5, but they cannot rule out 6, which is the most interesting one, actually, this space called the Hantzsch-Lehnert manifold. So for the topology of the special universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I see. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I actually have nothing to say about that. I just saw this paper and thought it was cool. But yeah, thanks for. These are all the orientable ones. There are 4 non-orientable ones which are not going to be relevant in this for me. So basically, all that matters here is the torus for this talk, and the last one is the interesting one. And I'll explain soon why this case, I'm just going to refer to it as the Hantzsch-Lehnert manifold, has a holonomy Z2 times Z2. And here is like how the two generators of Z2 times Z2 act as a subgroup of SO3. So for this G6. Okay, so like I mentioned, I wrote this for algebraic geometry, so I have a slide explaining what G2 manifolds are. I guess I could skip this, but everyone here knows this stuff. The main thing here.
It's good to see how to put it on one slide.
Yeah, I think I did a good job. Yeah. This was like basically like the crucial information that I needed for the talk in one slide. So, and the most crucial thing is the stuff about the possible least subgroups, right? I mean, there are more copies of these guys, SU2, U1, SU3, of course, but like, just wanted to tell which are the possible like holonomies of submanifolds of a G2 space. So, all right. So the kind of basic model. Like I said, I'm going to be interested like in vibrations over this flat tree manifold, and like the easiest example that you can work with is like if you just take C2 times T3. Of course, everyone here knows this. Like you just take like the flat product metric on the tree torus, take a flat hyperkähler distortion C2, and then you just define this thing, and it's like closed and actually distortion free too. So this is just the flat metric, and it's G2, of course. So now you can extend this, for example, instead of taking T3, just take G6, that space that I was talking about. But now like you have non-trivial monodromy, so you have to take care of that in order to glue this thing as a global form, right? So, for example, if you choose local flat sections of the cotangent of G6, then that second term is fine because that's just going to transform as the determinant of the matrix, and that's just that lies in SO3. So that thing is a global flat tree form. And then like if you choose the omegas to transform appropriately, then you can construct a global G2 structure on this. And then you get something that has a slightly bigger holonomy, because now you have this monodromy of the base on it. And then something even better that you can do here is like now you can choose gamma and ADE group. And so, for example, if you choose gamma like Zn, then that action commutes with like the holonomy action here. So that everything that there will descend to the quotient. So you get like a G2 structure on this space here, which is the ALE times G6, and that's going to have holonomy SU2 times K.
It's not really on the global product, but the Z2 times Z2 has to act on the ALE space. So it's really the resolution times T3 divided by K. That's a G2 structure, not the product.
the resolution times T3 divided by K. Yeah, so G6 is a quotient of T3 by K. Okay, yeah, I have to think about this, but, well, possibly divided by K on that first factor, you get a global G2 structure.
It has to, because the Z2 times Z2 that you, if it just acts only on the T3, it's the local eigenvalue.
Yeah, but, I guess this is, so that's what I meant when I wrote that you have to make the K act inversely on the hyperkähler structure on that base, on that guy. Yeah, you're right. Like that has a further quotient. Yeah, sorry. There is a K. There should be a K here. Right. So that way you enhance the holonomy of your space. Like it's not actually equal to G2, but it's very close, and it's close enough in a specific sense. And then another thing you can do is, like, instead of taking like a trivial product, you can take like a flat complex vector bundle over your Q, whose monodromy is one of these ADE groups. So in general, like this is the sure.
So if you want to flat bring two complex vector bundles over this manifold, then the monodromy will be the group K.
I'm saying. Yeah. I'm saying over any of these other guys, you don't have to choose G6. You know, okay. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know. I mean, you could do even over T3. You know, as long as you choose a flat non-trivial vector bundle, then like make the holonomy higher. You know, that's the point. This is kind of the setup that's like the abstract setup that you have to. This is not always possible to be chosen, like this data. Like it's there's compatibility conditions that have to be met. So like if you choose like a rank one, so I changed the quaternionic notation here, but it's like it's a complex rank two vector bundle. SP1 is SU2, right? So gamma is a subgroup of SU2, finite, and then you choose a quaternionic vector bundle over. So like H is a flat quaternionic connection on the bundle, and it has to be compatible with the gamma action. So that what that means is that you need to So the flat connection can be seen as a representation of the fundamental group into SP1, right? But like the compatibility condition is that it should commute with gamma, so like it has to take values in the centralizer of gamma. And that's not always possible for those holonomies over there. Depending on which kind of gamma and which type of platycosm you choose. So it's and then you need like a flat volume form on your base, and you need a vertical hyperkähler structure on the fibers of your quaternionic bundle. So what I said is that this can be chosen in most cases, and then if it can be chosen, then you can induce the G2 structure in the quotient. Right. So what I said earlier is an example of this. And then in this case, the G2 structure just is some of those. Now, because you have a connection, I mean, in this particular case, I'm taking it to be a flat connection. So you have a decomposition of the differential. And if it was not flat, there would be a third term over there. It depends on the curvature of that connection. But in this case, it's flat. So the equation for a closed G2 structure is equivalent to all these equations here. For this eta and this mu, and that turns the problem into of constructing a G2 structure into a problem of like determining these things. And actually, this is not a big surprise. This is actually a special case of a theorem of Donaldson in his paper on adiabatic limits of Kovalev-Lefschetz vibrations. So this is a more general statement than what I said. You know, you don't need your Q to be a flat three manifold at all. You don't need your that eta that I defined over there to be hyperkähler. You just have to be hypersymplectic. And you just need to satisfy these equations to see like the curvature term of the connection appearing here in the last equation. And so like constructing a closed list of structures is equivalent of constructing this. So I'm gonna refer to these things as Donaldson data for the vibration. So the point of why am I doing this? Because I want to start with one of these G2 platyfolds, and I want to understand like if I can deform it to a different deform its closed G2 structure to a different closed G2 structure. You know, so I would like to build a deformation family for that. So that's what's written there. I would like to define like a map F from a total space to a base that I don't know yet what it is, such that the central fiber is M0, and such that I have a phi0 on that M0, and so that's kind of a section that's concentrated at just the central fiber, but I want to extend that section to be like a closed tree, positive tree form at every fiber. That's what I would like to do. No. I start with any of these, something that looks like this, right? I start with one that I know that has a G2 structure, a closed G2 structure, and I want to fit it into a family. I want it to be the central fiber of a family, so I want to construct the family such that, this guy's the central fiber, is a 7 manifold. I want, if I go to a different fiber, it's going to be 7 manifold as well. What is the condition for that to have a closed G2 structure?
It's like desingularizing the fibers.
So
you're desingularizing the fibers.
Yeah, but like that desingularization depends on the point of the base. It's a simultaneous desingularization of the fibers. That's what I want to do. And but then there's gonna be a condition I cannot choose any random the desingularization not vary randomly. Like there's going to be a condition to the Donaldson data puts a constraint on what can I do, So that's what I want to determine. Right? But I need to construct the family first to understand what's going on, So the way the family is constructed is there's this thing called the Slodow slice. So that's the deformation space of the ADE singularity. And there's a nice geometric description of it, which is, so GC here is the complex semi-simple Lie algebra that's MacA dual to gamma. Okay, so if gamma is Zn, this is SLnC. Okay, so this happens everything here is complex in this slide. So the deformation space can be constructed explicitly inside of GC as follows. You choose a special element in the Lie algebra, X, that has these properties here. Then you complete it to an SL2C triple. And then you define this Slodow slice is a subset of the complexified Lie algebra, which is you just take this X plus the centralizer of Y. And then what you do is you have an adjoint quotient from, so the adjoint quotient, the actual adjoint quotient goes from GC to GC modulo conjugations by the Lie group G, but that's actually isomorphic to this. That's a Chevalier's theorem. So HC is the complexified Cartan of GC, and W is the Weyl group. So if you take this thing and you restrict to this Slodow slice, then the theorem of Slodowy and Breeze-Korn is that this map, this restriction, is a flat map. What is a flat map in the algebraic geometry sense? It just means that the fibers are all the same dimension, and such that the zero fiber is the ADE singularity. So you should think of the other fibers as being deformations of this singularity, right? And I mean, this has a technical name in algebraic geometry, but doesn't matter for our purpose. It's just you have to know that like this is the best deformation space of this singularity. You know, any other kind of deformation that you do, you can fit inside of this one. So that's the tool that I want to use. So basically, the point is that I'm going to keep the flat structure fixed, but I want to vary the hyperkähler structure and see what is the condition for that to be a closed G2 structure. You know, so unfortunately, you have to do a little more than this. Like you have to like because this thing here is just telling us about the like the deformations of the singularity, but it's not telling us about the hyperkähler structure yet. But fortunately, Kornheimer like gave a complete description of like how the hyperkähler structures work. So basically, what happens is that there is another family that's like this Kw. Notice that it depends on a choice of an element of the Cartan, which is a simultaneous resolution of all fibers of that. So this new family, like the fibers of it, are resolutions of the fibers of this Lodoy family, right? And the way this is done is it's like there is like a period map that maps this. It's just a projection map from HC to the quotient of the Cartan. Yeah, and there's a Torelli theorem also for hyperkähler AO spaces that says that all these fibers, like all hyperkähler AO spaces are fibers of this Kornheimer family. So this is all due to Kornheimer. So I have to do a little, so to connect to the Higgs bundle story, like this is not really like crucial. I mean, this is not, it just makes everything look nicer. I don't want to like to fix an omega. I want to like to take this over all omega so that I can, and so when I do that, I enlarge this base to be three copies of the Cartan. So which I think of as being the Cartan tensor, the adjoint representation of SU2. Right. So you just think of this as h times h plus h plus h, you know, and the first h is parameterizing this all these possible omegas that you can do. But really, this family is trivial in the direction of the first omega. So the idea to construct this family is to, I want to fiber this kind of hyperkähler families over my three manifold. So at each point, I want to have this deformation space on top of it, and I want to choose a section that's going to pick a different hyperkähler deformation over every point. But there's going to be a condition on this section for this to be a closed G2 structure. Right. So that's what's written here. The condition is a consequence of this. So the family that I want to write is a family of seven manifolds, but that's not really very appropriate. I cannot use algebraic geometry to construct that directly. I construct a bigger family, and I induce this family from that bigger family. So that's what this result is saying. So basically, there is a flat vector bundle over Q. So that flat vector bundle E is essentially the cotangent of Q enlarged with a copy of the Cartan. So it's cotangent of Q tensor with the Cartan, more or less. Yeah, but I'm gonna see in the next slide. The Cartan of G. Yeah. So in this slide, in the previous slide, I put C's on everything because here I needed to talk about the complexified stuff. But I'm like, in general, I want to talk about the real stuff, right? So it's a real Cartan. Okay. So the really crucial thing is this flat vector bundle here, and then the thing is that the family is going to be over the total space of this vector bundle. Okay. And basically, my seven manifolds are going to be parameterized by sections of this. So what you do is like you construct like the Donaldson data, but in this total space of this family, in this U. So this is a very large space where you construct things that, you know, and then you see for which sections of this space you can induce a Donaldson data on that guy. So like so here's the description. If you take the zero section of this bundle, that's you know, like, so I started with an M0 with a phi 0, right? So if I take the zero section, I can construct this family such that the restriction of this of this big family to the zero section, to the image of the zero section, is my original seven manifold, and such that this guys that I construct here restrict to that in that M0 to the G2 structure, right? And at each point, I have a copy of the Kronheimer family here.
So M0 is a flat orbital.
M0 is a seven manifold. Is the seven manifold that I start with. Sorry, a seven orbifold. An ADE orbifold. So that was fixed from the beginning, right? So like, the, of course, this construction is going to depend on that guy that you fixed in the beginning. And then, so the condition of the section is that if you have, so I told you that this is a flat bundle, right? Remember that this guy is chosen to be a flat free manifold. So the cotangent bundle has a flat structure, and this guy is going to be constructed from the cotangent bundle, so it's also going to have a flat structure, so I can talk about flat sections. And if I have a flat section, then I can define what my deformed seven manifold is defined by this formula. You just take the image of the section, and then you look at this inverse image in the big family, which is this guy. Right. So essentially, like this map U, so like essentially, like you construct like this total space which is big, like this is a rank three dimension of H vector bundle over three manifolds, like it's a big space, and then essentially you have like Kronheimer family over this total space, you know, and then you induce it on the sections to have the correct dimension. So that's the idea, right? So there's a sketch of the proof here, but I don't want to go through in much detail unless people want to. But the flat bundle is just what I said, and then the complex surfaces. Okay, so let me comment something. This is based on a theorem that my advisor, Tony Pantev, with Ron Donaghi and Manuel Giaconesco, they proved in the Calabi-Yau setting, relating like families of non-compact Calabi-Yau manifolds to Higgs bundles in the usual sense. So this theorem is like, this construction is essentially the same as theirs, but the difference is that here, because we don't have holomorphic structures, we have to do everything locally. So like, basically, I want to pull back the Kronheimer family to over my flat bundle, but I only have these maps locally, so I have to pull them back locally and then glue on local intersections according to some co-cycle, the co-cycle of the original bundle that I have, and then you know construct this Donaldson data. So the like I said, the flat structure doesn't change. I just keep it fixed, but I want to make this eta is constructed like locally by wedging these the pullbacks of the you know the Kähler forms that exist in the Kronheimer family, and then like you know the gluing of these families is chosen so that when I glue these things together, like you know when I locally wedge these two, like the thing is well defined globally, so it matches on intersections, you know. And then, but these two are fine. The most complicated step is this, is the connection that you need to in order to ensure like the Donaldson equations, you know. But anyway, once you construct this, then you have to prove that like these things induce Donaldson data on this, where S is a flat section. So I'm calling a flat spectral cover, and it's going to be clear when I get to the Higgs bundle part why this is flat spectral cover. But like, yeah, it's a section of a bundle of Cartan algebras over the three manifold, right? So it kind of looks like a Higgs bundle already. And then, so the original family that I want to construct is parameterized by these flat sections. So the way you do it, the way you construct it explicitly is, you know, you take this map that takes a point in the three manifold and a flat section, and just, you know, it's an evaluation map. It's better than a tautological map. And then you have this family of U over epsilon, then you just pull it back to here and then project it down to gamma flat. And that's the family of seven manifolds. So it's really parameterized by these flat sections. So now if you want to see like what is the other G2, you know, another fiber, then you have to like to choose a flat section here and look how it looks like. So this is kind of like a formalization of, you know, for the stuff that Sakura was talking about today, but in this flat case. So it's essential that the three manifold is flat, otherwise, you know, you cannot like, you know, it's not constrained enough. Like you don't have this notion of like flat sections, so you don't have a flat bundle here. So sorry, I know this was very abstract up to now, but I actually will mostly focus on a specific example where I want to compute stuff. This first part was more about like making the relation between the spectral covers and the spectral covers parameterizing G2 deformations more, you know, formal.
Did you actually demount closed condition?
No. This is just closed. This is just closed G2 structures.
Then your deformation is infinite.
What do you mean?
What kind of key properties do you want for your construction?
I don't know what you mean. What key properties? This is a very specific kind of G2 structure, right? These are so the deformation is such that the base is kept flat, you know, like they are all of that type, or like, you know, like they are kind of like locally they're like the basic model that I started with. So of course this is not going to be all G2 structure on a fixed topological type of a 7 manifold. They are just this specific kind. They have all these particular properties.
You know? All locally of product type, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And therefore they should also be copulous. Because you say the fibers are hyperchar manifolds, like Kutuji Hansen, if you say Z2 over there. So
that's right.
They should automatically be cautious.
Yeah. Even the deformations? Yeah, I didn't know about that.
Because you stay in the family of local products. I don't really see how you could leave this family because without introducing curvature on the base. Yeah. So
yeah, I mean, how long do you all those manifolds with SU2 semi direct product H?
Yeah. Yes, so yeah.
Yeah. You say that's the this thing can vary in the moduli space on fibers to fiber.
Yeah. Well, if it says flat section, then it can no longer vary, I guess. So you start with the things that can vary from fiber to fiber, but then you try in order to satisfy the equations, the fact is locally constant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, like, you don't have well-defined, you know, that thing, those things. So I'm not saying that it's not possible. I'm just saying that, like, those things that I define, like, the on the total space, they're not going to be well-defined on the, or they're not going to satisfy the criteria for a closed G2 structure, you know. So, I mean... Right, yeah, okay, yeah. So every time you read this, remember there is a K here. K is the Klein 4 group, again.
When you try to pass to the universal cover, do you get some products from it?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So I'm gonna do some computations when this gamma is E2, so it's like an A1 singularity. So the reason why I kept choosing this G6 is because the holonomy of this space is going to be SU2 times K, and like K among the possible holonomies of this flat cosmos is the only one that doesn't fix the direction. So you automatically, you cannot be conjugated to a subgroup of SU3 inside of G2. So you get like an N equals 1 background. So like at least when you're in this particular example, but in principle you could choose like you could take another one that's not G6, but like choose one of these flat vector bundles over it, and then that would give you that you could enhance the holonomy of that one. But like among these easier examples, like this is the one that is more consistent with the physics, I guess. So the thing is that. So basically, like, you just have to see, like, you just have to compute the flat sections, right? So, like, you have to take things that are fixed by the monodromy. And if you compute this, you're going to get that, like, this is given by the three positive axes in R3 for this particular gamma equals E2 and for this particular space. And in fact, like, there is a computation of... Right, yeah, so, sorry, it's, There is a computation of in the book of Dominic Joyce for this modular space of G2 structure of this guy, and it looks like this. So I mean, it's not like phrased in this language, of course, but it's there in somewhere there. Yeah.
So is that actually one of the resolutions of one of the last examples that you're presenting here?
Yeah.
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 But you could choose gamma to be larger than
that. You could choose, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then it wouldn't be a Joyce example anymore, I guess.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah. So I did computations with Z2 case. You're gonna see like soon that like this thing. So I want to compute like moduli spaces. So basically the point is that I'm gonna compute two other moduli spaces that the physics tell us that should be the same as this one. It's gonna agree. I mean, I can compute it when gamma goes Z2, but it becomes complicated as soon as gamma is a more complicated group. You know? Yes.
On G6.
Yes. And I'm going to compute this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that agrees with that.
Yes, it agrees.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So the M theory moduli space is really the complexified G2 structure. So you have to, complexify this space, and then you get like what I'm calling like a YC. So the reason for Y is because it looks like a trident, right? So that's why I'm denoting as Y. So it's like three axes in R3, and then the complexification is like three copies of C. So there's a subtlety here that I'm going to skip, but like it's not really C star, it's C, because there's a Z2 action on here that you have to take care for, and you know it's like the Weyl group action. So the Weyl group of this choice of G, it acts non-trivially on these things, and you have to take into account of that. And that's part of why it gets complicated when you do Zn, because then you have an Sn action that you have to consider here when computing this moduli space. So anyway, but like in this particular example here, you get like this trident of C's touching at a point. So I also should like tell like the physicists, please, if I say something that doesn't make sense, tell me, you know, like, but I hope I got the physics picture right. So basically like the duality is that I want to use the duality to like to give a description of that moduli space in terms of other moduli spaces that are more well-known in algebraic geometry, you know, and so this first slide is like my attempt to explain what M-theory type 2A duality is, like this first paragraph. So, but I guess everyone here knows what like how this works. But the point is that like if I am using this space here, this M equals C2 with gamma equals Z2 times G6 quotient by K. The type 2A dual that I should look like is, sorry, this was supposed to be, here I'm describing it in general for any Q, right? But like, what I'm going to look like is T star of G6 as my Calabi-Yau threefold, which is the type 2A dual of what I started with. You know, and in the most general setup, there's a lot of conditions on like how this stuff has to behave, but like in this particular, like in the general condition of general G2 manifold, but in this particular nice case, like it's just this guy, and you know, and if gamma equals Zn, that signals there are n D6 brains wrapping Q inside of T star of Q, right?
What's the G
So there's this Atiyah-Hitchin moduli space of monopoles, right? Well, I guess. Yeah, yeah. Right. So anyway, the point of all of this is that we should expect the moduli space in the 2A side to parameterize special Lagrangian deformations of Q, and this data of n d6 brains on Q that I haven't defined mathematically what it is, but I'm going to talk about it now. But it's basically like was already explained to us by Sakura before. So the condition for the type 2A strings on this guy of this ND6 brain is given by this Hermitian and Mills equations. And then, you know, you have the condition that is going to wrap your three cycle is obtained by doing dimensional reduction of these equations along down to three dimensions. And then the equations that you get are this. So these equations actually, like, they have appeared in the math literature, like, very early on. Like, you know, they appear explicitly, like, in a paper of Donaldson on twisted harmonic sections from, I think, 89, and then in Corlett's paper as well. But at least in this context of, you know, wrapping D6 brains, like, describing D6 brains wrapping a three-manifold, as far as I know, the first time they appear is, like, in this paper that Tony Plantev wrote with Martin Weinholt. So I'm calling this a PW system, like a solution to these three equations. So essentially what these equations, so let me go to the next slide to explain better what these equations mean. So like the point is that the moduli of D6 brains on the three manifold is going to be described as solutions to this equation. And I just have to interpret them, what they mean exactly. And to interpret what they mean, there is this theorem of Donaldson and Corlett. So I wrote it here in the most general form possible, but for our purpose, you can think of G as being SLNC and K is SUN, so like it's a compact subgroup. And Q here is the universal cover of your three manifold. So what the theorem says is that so if you fix a homomorphism of the fundamental group to G, so here G is a complex group, right? So it says that if you take a row equivariant map, this is a harmonic map if and only if the representation is semi-simple. So this harmonic map is really like if G is SLNC and K is SUN, this is really a harmonic metric on so. If you don't have the harmonic position, it's just a Hermitian metric. But this is saying that like there's this special kind of Hermitian metric called the harmonic metric, and that occurs exactly when this representation is semi-simple. So I want to like to just connect with these equations. So that condition of the metric being harmonic is exactly this second condition here, which is usually called the D term, right? So essentially, you can translate these two equations into the equation for a flat connection, a flat complex connection. So A here is a SUN connection on a complex vector bundle. And theta is Higgs field. So it's a one form of values in the adjoint bundle. But there is something hidden here, which is the Hermitian metric. Like if I'm saying that this is an SUN connection, I have to choose a Hermitian metric. And that's hidden in this Hodge star here. So this is really an equation for three things. And you know, what I'm saying is that once you fix A and you fix theta, this equation here is telling you that that metric is harmonic. So, and the first two equations, they can be combined into the equation for a flat complex connection on your three manifold. So once you understand that this is what the equations are telling you, you basically, like the moduli space of those things is basically the moduli space of the flat connections, complex flat connections on your bundle. So this is just an element of the, you know, like the moduli space is just a character variety of your three manifold with values in that group. So the character variety is like you take all homomorphisms of the fundamental group into your group G, and then you quotient, but this is like a GIT quotient, like you just take the, you know, the semi-stable, the semi-simple representations. So this is like modulo conjugations, because if two representations are conjugate, they define the same flat connection. So this is the moduli space that you need to compute in the two-way side. So the way you compute this, I didn't write it here, but if you remember, like in the very first slide, I'm not sure if I want to go back there, but there was an exact sequence for the fundamental group of G6. There was an exact sequence, one goes to Z3, goes to pi, goes to H, goes to 1, right? So that exact sequence is going to induce an exact sequence in the homomorphisms, and that will give you maps between the character variety of this G6 to the character variety of a 3 torus, which is something that's known, you know? So basically, this thing maps into there, and then you just have to see, like, what's the image and what are the fibers. And the fibers are finite, so that's not, that doesn't do anything, you know? Like, you just really have to understand the image. And then, so the character variety of a 3 torus with values in SL2C is 3 copies of the is a product of 3 copies of the of C star, which is the you know, it's the maximal torus of SL2C modulo the vial group, which is, in this case, is Z2. And you just have to see how this maps there, and it maps there, looks exactly like the other thing. Like it's three copies of C touching at a point. This is a computation that's not that hard. But it becomes complicated once you, for example, SL3 is already complicated because then you have like a permutation action that you have to consider, and then you start having like some weird schemes here. Okay, so like at least these two things match. So at least in this very particular case, you can think of this as a, you know, as a mathematical description of what the duality is between M theory on the original guy and 2A on this guy. Right. So I said that I wanted to talk a little about neurosymmetry. I'm not sure if there's enough time. Do I still have 10 minutes? I think. Is that right? Well. All right, I'll just go through that briefly. So basically, you can construct an SYZ vibration here for this Calabi-Yau, and the base looks like this thing that I'm calling R3Y. So what that means is that like it's an orbifold where like along the three axes of Y it has like you know there is this non-trivial isotropy given by K. So this K acts, remember, it acts by flipping some coordinates, and then it has non-trivial isotropy exactly along these three axes. So that's what this R3Y is. And this is actually a known orbifold. It's called the Y-vertex. And there's a paper of Lofting, Yao, and Zaslow that they construct like a fine Hessian matrix. So in the complement of the singular set of this space. And then they use that to prove that like this cotangent of this guy has semi-flat Calabi-Yau metric, so it's possible. I don't want to say anything about metrics here because this talk is not about metrics, but I think it's possible that like you could quotient this by a specific lattice to put a semi-flat Calabi-Yau metric here that such that this is an SYZ vibration. Because the point is that in this vibration here, outside of Y, your fibers are 3 tori. Over Y, you have these unreduced schemes that are the very singular fiber is a copy of this G6. So it's a quotient of the 3 torus by the Klein-4 group, but it comes like with multiplicity given by the isotropy of it, which is the entire K, you know. And the other guys are an intermediate guy that has isotropy Z2. So it's kind of a weird kind of SYZ vibration, which these fibers are not singular, but they have like this unreduced structure, you know, like the singular fibers. So this is kind of like very, very, it's just a conjecture, just like something that I think like it's possible that it could happen. So like this G6 that I mentioned, it has a property that it is a twofold cover over the tree sphere and the branching locus, and the branching locus are the Borromean rings here. So this manifold has this property, right?
It's twofold, not threefold.
It's a twofold covering, yeah. It also has a threefold covering over another knot, but you know. But I want to focus on this one, and the reason I want to focus on this one is because, let me just say something first. This space here, R3 over Y, if you take a one-pointer compactification of that, that looks like the orbit space of a certain nearly Kähler manifold, which is SU3 over U1 squared. So if you look at SU3 over U1 squared, has a nearly Kähler structure. There is an SO3 action in the left by this. And then you look at the orbit space of that action. That looks like this guy, but it's a compact space, right? So there's an extra point. But the orbifold structure looks exactly like this. So I don't know. This is kind of a loose idea, but the idea is that, like, you know, if you see this from the perspective of someone who lives in the S3 that's covered by this G6, and if you do a metric degeneration that, like, you know, collapses this G6. Oh, another thing that I should say is that collapse of flat tree manifold is classified. So, like, this is like, you can just look up in a paper and, like, you know, everything that possibly can happen. And, like, you know, it would be something like, you know, these links, like, they become like a bouquet of 3 circles, and then you could reassemble them in a different way, like 3 fully linked knots, for example, and that would give you a different space. And actually, there's a description of like what should be the the analog of G6 in this particular case in the paper of Atiyah and Witten. It's a certain real flag of SO3. So there is, anyway, this is there in this paper of Atiyah and Witten. But for now, this is just a naive idea. I think I'm running out of time, so I'm not sure if, like, I'm going to skip then the flat Higgs bundle stuff because Sakura already talked about this. But it's essentially like, you know, like you define a flat Higgs bundle to be, you know, just something that, as you would expect, and I focus on these guys that have theta, wedge theta equals to zero, and then you can, in this situation, you can prove a spectral correspondence for that. So like these things are, so a flat, like a spectral data for a Higgs bundle of that kind is given by this data here. You have a finite covering of your three manifold, a line bundle over it, and then there's some structure on that line bundle, like a Hermitian metric, a flat connection. And in the case of flat three manifolds, the Plateau cosmos, you have to impose this condition that the spectral cover is flat. That's the condition from the very beginning for the deformations of the two structures. So, but in general, you don't need all these conditions. But then the point is that like this thing is like the same, like there's an equivalence between these things, which is an equivalence of categories, so it's something very strong. And so the point of doing this is that like the Higgs bundles, like you have a bundle and you have a Higgs field, and this thing depends on your G2 structure and on the C field also, right? But they depend on trivially on those two things. And then but when you go to the spectral cover, these things untwist, and now the spectral cover, which is just this first data here, number one, depends solely on the G2 structure, which is exactly the statement from the very beginning of the deformation thing. So you want to do this if you want to forget about the C field and you just care about actual G2 structures. So that's why this is useful. And another thing that's interesting here is that you have a map, a Hitching map, that's similar to the Hitching map for like holomorphic Higgs bundles, but now you go to flat sections, so these are flat sections. But it's not as nice as the other one, but you still have this thing. And you still have the property that spectral covers only depends on the image of the Hitching map. So anyway, so the point is that if you try to build the SYZ mirror of this, so I told you what the SYZ vibration was. So if you try to do it in the usual way, like here you have this K action that you have to take a K action in the mirror, you end up with an orbifold. So this is in brackets because it's an orbifold. And the problem with this is that the moduli space of the B brains, they're like now they're D3 brains, right? So they are like points in the mirror fiber. More precisely, like they are like skyscraper sheaves, but basically, like you have to compute a Hilbert scheme of points, which is something kind of hard to compute, especially for a threefold. This is not known even for very basic threefolds, especially not an orbifold. So that's what you would want to compute here. But it's really hard to compute this. So what I do instead, I construct a Krappent resolution of that orbifold that has the correct moduli space. So here you have to be careful because if you take any Krappent resolution, actually there's an obvious one here that doesn't work. You have to take like the one that works, you know, and that's the one that works. That I'm calling like here the spectral mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The dual guy, the thing with the dual guy is that
remember that G6 is a quotient of a three torus by a free action of K. But like the dual guy is the mirror fiber, so like the mirror fiber parameterizes local systems, so the action now is a pullback of local systems, and that action is not free. Well, I mean, this is a proposal, I guess. You know, like this is a proposal what should be the mirror. But I'm going to do a computation at the end that kind of tell for the Z2 case that matches the same moduli space, you know.
The thing that you end up with sort of has all the poles in G-hat.
Yes, yes. But the thing is that I don't want to compute the Hilbert scheme of this because, well, I don't know how to, you know. So I need to change this by something else that will give the correct result, right? So what I do is I construct this thing that I'm calling the spectral mirror here. So what it is, you reinterpret like your mirror as parameterizing certain as solving a deformation problem on your original guy. So here, you think of the x of your mirror as parameterizing local systems on here. You assume that like so there's a map from a typical fiber, which is a three torus, it's smooth, to the singular fiber, which is the quotient of the three torus. So use that map to interpret like the local systems on the smooth fibers as being deformations of local systems on the singular fiber. Right. So that's the proposal. So basically, you know, you have local systems on the G6. You want to look at all the modular space of all such deformations. That's going to give you the proposal for the mirror. So this is like just spectral data, as I just described, over G6. And then because I have this spectral correspondence, that's the same thing as a modular space of these flat Higgs bundles. And so, but it's not just, there's a specific condition here. I need the spectral cover to have this kind, this group of K. So like the spectral cover is a ramified finite cover and has a Galois group. In this case, it's an unramified actually. It has a Galois group, which has to be K. So this is a particular type of. The SO4C condition here comes when you unpack like this, all this data here for the Higgs field, and you find that the Higgs field has to take values in SO4C. So basically it's a subset of that. Okay, so this is the last slide. So basically, what you can do now is like, okay, so you want to compute SO4C Higgs bundles. As I said before, this is computed by a character variety, and actually this one is even easier to construct than the SO2C because, well, we can do the same method that I did before, and also there is a spin map to SO4C. So the spin space of SO4C is SO2C times SO2C. I already know the character variety of SO2C for the three manifold, and so there are two different, the point is that there are two different ways to compute this. And then you have to compute the Hilbert scheme of that space that you get. For two, I'm doing the Z2 case, and you get this same guy here. But this is a kind of a complicated computation. But it's not the entire Hilbert scheme. It's like it's just because I only want B brains that are supported on the mirror fiber, right? So and they are. So it's not the full Hilbert scheme of points, you know. Right. So the point is that like this gives a possible procedure of like constructing like mirror singular fibers for SOC, but like this is a very specific context when you have like these singular fiber being basically a quotient of a smooth fiber, right? But in principle, like this procedure should give you a way to construct that using this moduli space of these flat Higgs bundles that we've been talking about. So these are just forget about this. Thank you. Oh yeah, sure. Sorry, I went over time, so I was like, yeah. So the most obvious thing that needs to be done is like, it's basically like Sebastian's comment of like getting the torsion-free condition, right? Well, as I said, I didn't do anything metrically here, but Donaldson has been developing this theory of harmonic sections. The theorem of Donaldson that I quoted in the beginning, like there's an extension of that when the thing is co-closed. And that's a condition, like that's a certain section that you construct from that data to be harmonic. So the idea is like how to identify which of those flat spectral covers that are constructed give me a G2 space such that this Donaldson section is harmonic. No, so that's something that has to be determined. You know, I don't know. Yes, maximum submanifold.
I have actually solved the derivation problem.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah. I would like to see that for sure. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll take a look. Thanks. So I've been discussing like heteroic duals with Alex, who is here, but like Dave and Andreas kind of like told me that this is more complicated than we think, but we think that we know how to do the spectral data on this on the heterotic duals. Looks like that. And like there's this project going on with all these UPenn people who are trying to construct solutions of that PW system that have known zero. So, yeah, and then there's some other stuff, but yeah.
KW
is Kapustin-Witten. Because these PW equations, they are a particular case of these extended Bogomolny equations that come from the Kapustin-Witten system. So like, you know, we think that this fits into, there's a geometric, like these PW solutions fit into inside like Kapustin-Witten system for different values of the T parameter, you know. So, yeah. That was the thing that I was talking about when I had this slide with the links. Like, you know, like it's classified how, like there's a classification of like the collapse of flat matrix at least on this Plateau cosmos. So you know how these things can degenerate, you know.
They can degenerate to lower dimensional flat
orbifolds, yeah. Everything I talked about here was flat manifolds, but they can degenerate to flat orbifolds. So for example, like this G6, it can degenerate to a flat orbifold, which is like, it's called RP22. It's like, it's kind of like an RP2 with two orbifold singularities. So there is a paper of Betiol, Piccione, and Derzinski that describes all of this. Like there's all possibilities, you know. So that's something that I think would be interesting to understand here.
Other questions? Thank you.